I would trade him if I could.
I don't think many people liked it, to be honest. I don't care.
Last year didn't really do well for anybody.
We should probably delete all of this.
By the laws of the podcast gods, we owe an answer.
Reporting the Highline with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car or in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hey Rapids fans, this is Holding the Highline with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves, and we are part of the Beautiful Game Network. It is Wednesday, August 26, 2020. Messi is breaking up with Barca via fax machine. Brian Galvan is learning the lessons of DMs and not hitting reply. Alphonso Davies and Bayern are champions of Europe. Full America has doubled up with Anthony Robinson joining Tim Ream at Craven Cottage, and St. Louis FC will be coming to an end in a couple of months as MLS for the Lou focuses on St. Louis City. But all those storylines are dwarfed by the breaking news from the last couple of hours at time of recording. Five of the six MLS games that were scheduled to take place tonight, Wednesday, have been postponed due to player protests over the death of Jacob Blake and the ongoing inability for America to address racial injustice. The Rapids did not play their game at FC Dallas tonight, and their home match against Sporting Kansas City on Saturday is very much in doubt. I am joined now by a man who did not get in a bar fight in Greece over the weekend, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Rabbi?
Nor was I convicted of anything, so it's good times. It's been an interesting day, huh, Matt?
I was focused on looking at the game ahead. Obviously, we were going to have a little bit more of a chaotic show tonight with two reviews and potentially a preview or two since we didn't get the podcast between the RSL game and the FC Dallas game. And in typical podcasting chaos format, something breaking news, you know, happens immediately after and completely throws everything out of whack. I guess fortunately, Mark, we were scheduled to record anyway tonight, so we're doing this in a timely manner and certainly are reacting to the news in a way that's going to be hopefully informative and give some good perspective to all of you dear listeners, all of you dear Rapids fans in the next couple of days. You know, I say this with, you know, again, timestamp, folks, we're recording this 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on Wednesday, August 26, 2020. By the time you're listening to this, potentially Thursday afternoon or Friday, we could know what's happening this weekend in MLS, especially relating to the Rapids game against Sporting Kansas City. And I mean, for all we know, Mark, like, we could have a full-on sit-in coming our way in the forms of basically players saying, you know, until we get justice for Jacob Blake, Breonna Taylor, say their names, the list goes on. Like, there is a, for the third, maybe the fourth time, I've lost count, I am in an emotional state, Mark, where I have serious doubts about the 2020 MLS season coming back or happening in anything that was close to normal. And I didn't even, I forgot to mention this in the rundown, Mark, the Open Cup's not happening this year. So everything is awful, and I think this is a turning point and an inflection point, I think, in terms of athletes using their platform and their presence to speak truth to power. And I think fairly or unfairly now, you know, we've seen the NBA walked out. I imagine they're full on, you know, they're like, games aren't going to happen tomorrow. Games aren't happening Friday. They're going to have meetings. Several MLB games got canceled. I would assume now pressure is on every team that was going to play this weekend in MLS. And now, especially, I was talking before we hit the record button with one of my hockey friends, Mark, you know, the NHL, all their games are taking place in Canada. Their sport is predominantly white, but now, just like how wearing a mask out in public in this country has become a political statement, what you do during the national anthem in this country is now a political statement. And now, whether it's college football, whether it's the NHL, whether it's games taking place, whether it's the NFL, now players choosing to play or have a walkout of their matches will now become a political statement, either for the same things that the NBA and now MLS are fighting for, or is going to be on some level taken as ambivalence towards those social causes.
Yeah, I mean, you said a lot of things, and all of them are really on point about First of all, the fact that a soccer podcast about the Colorado Rapids is way over its head in talking about the social issues of the day. You also pointed out something really important just now that you just like, the great thing about Matt is that he says a lot of things and he tends to say them very brilliantly and very fast. The brilliant thing that he just said was kind of drawing a dichotomy between how the NHL is reacting to this, the NFL is reacting to this, and the NBA. And pointing out that the NHL, a predominantly white sport, is handling this differently. You know, MLS is a really interesting middle point. I think a lot of its fans would typically be categorized as politically liberal for reasons that make some logical sense, which is that it's a fairly internationalist, cosmopolitan fan base, right? If you like MLS, you probably follow sports in other countries. You have traveled frequently to other countries. You speak many languages, maybe, or at least you're comfortable in a country with other languages. And so that sometimes has an impact on your kind of political beliefs, or at least your philosophy of the universe. Another way of saying that is, another way of saying it about MLS is, the fans are typically fairly socially liberal and at least kind of open-minded on things like immigration because the league is full of immigrants, right? You know, like, it's really important for your team to be able to get under the international slot cap by handing out green cards. Therefore, you are, if you really love your MLS team, you're probably in favor of broader immigration policy, which has political implications. That has meaning for how a league addresses things like Black Lives Matter, things like Jacob Blake and Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. Nothing exists in a vacuum. I won't oversell the point, but the way MLS responded tonight, I was proud. I was happy. One game, as you mentioned, I think it was Nashville and Miami, kicked off, and then they kind of found out about what was going on. I think the interesting thing is that, and this is not to be critical of...
Just to interrupt you really quick, Mark, Orlando City hosting Nashville SC full-time 3-1 to Orlando. So I guess that game... It was at halftime when we finally found out about Incher in Atlanta, I think was the first one. And then basically the broadcast on ESPN Plus, which was the Dallas broadcast for me, said opened up with the games been postponed. So Orlando and Nashville did complete. None of the other 5 games that were supposed to take place tonight kicked off. The Colorado Rapids Twitter account, at Colorado Rapids, sent out a tweet. We stand in solidarity with the players for both teams in the ongoing fight for racial and social justice. And they posted a tweet of the empty stadium and the players. They're somewhere on the field. I'm not sure how close they are to the center circle. And then it looks like all the players from both teams, looks like some staff. I'm having trouble picking out the coaches just off the top of my head, but in any case, they're all wearing masks shoulder to shoulder, wearing the black with yellow font Black Lives Matter shirt, and it looks like it's the entire teams from both squads, Colorado and Dallas. From Kai Kamara, at Kai Kamara on Twitter, we made a decision together as players and staff to not play our game tonight because there's more happening in our country to distract our minds to soccer. This is the first time I can agree that saying, quote, or he's using quotes to say it's just a game, implying the cliche of it's just a game, hashtag Black Lives Matter. And then Court Ford, who did have surgery, I was going to talk about that, folks, but a lot's happened. Who was not with the travel team, obviously, tweeted, couldn't be more proud right now. Our actions must meet our ambitions. Hoping this is the first of many attempts to achieve true, all caps, justice for all of in this country. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Rapids 96.
Thanks, Matt.
Sorry, that was supposed to be a really quick thing, and then it turned into a lot.
That was not a sarcastic thanks, Matt. That was a legitimate thanks, Matt. I was riffing off of your point, which was, I think, understatedly brilliant, which is about the relative treatment of different leagues. of this moment in America, which is not a unique moment, sadly. It is a moment which is kind of trained by the last moment, you know? Athletes are trying to figure out in the post-George Floyd era what it means exactly every time this happens. They're trying to learn from the kind of the original moment, which I believe happened 3 years ago, which is Colin Kaepernick.
4 years ago today was the first, I believe it was a preseason game, Colin Kaepernick did not stand for the national anthem.
Right, so we're all trying to learn from this moment, which is basically trying to figure out, like, what is the quote-unquote proper response? And you kind of put on one end of the parenthetical the NHL's response, which is a predominantly white league, and they play their games. And I don't think they really quite know what it would mean for a predominantly white league to stand up and say, we can't play while our black brothers are being shot, you know, in the streets without any due process. And on the other end, you've got the WNBA tonight, which they suspended their playoff games. Every player, it's still in the bubble for their playoffs, took the court tonight, and they were wearing shirts, and they made shirts that had, I don't know if you saw this, Matt, but it's a stunning image of white t-shirts with on the back of them, 7 bullet holes in the back of it. It absolutely gave me chills. It was an unbelievable image. And, you know, for me to watch MLS is like MLS kind of falls into that middle ground, which thank God they're not as kind of tone deaf and irrelevant to the moment as the NHL is. But they definitely haven't taken the kind of bold stance that WNBA and NBA players have made. Now, to finish the thought, to some degree, that's legitimate in the sense that, like, MLS players are not on the political or social level that a LeBron James is, right? Like, the NBA has tremendous reach, and the NFL has tremendous reach, and MLS is, you know, fractionally relevant by comparison to those organizations. And so to like be the most socially outspoken or to take the most bold moves ever might be kind of out of step. The flip side of that is the WNBA isn't nearly as popular as the NBA is, and they're taking extremely bold steps, and it's really kind of stunning. So, you know, I say all this, my final thought is something that I kind of sent out on Twitter, which is that I really, you know, it's important to me that the players don't play the game. I thought that that was relevant. I was relieved. I think it's personally moving to me. I kind of want to hear what they're thinking beyond just a tweet from Kai. I want an interview with a player, and I want an interview with a player also who's white. I'm broken up about this. I'm really frustrated and upset at our country, at the police forces who have seen this happen time and time again, and yet still haven't figured out how to tell their officers how to behave most responsibly when doing an arrest. You know, to kill a father with his children in the car to shoot a father with his children in the car it's just unconscionable. It's crushing to me as a father, as a human, right? And to figure out how the players in the Colorado Rapids locker room have that conversation with each other and with the fans is really important to me. And I'd love to see at some point something said that is, you know, a sense of leadership, a sense of solidarity, a sense of understanding from those players. Although, you know, I my heart goes out to them, and I feel that I feel like they need our support in order to feel like they are kind of carried and supported in this moment when they take a kind of a dangerous political stand. But I also kind of want to understand how they're taking this, and that it's not well, all the players in the league decided not to play their games, so we decided not to play their games. But rather, we decided not to play these games because we fundamentally are broken up and frustrated and deeply distressed by what's happening in our country right now.
Yeah, well said, Mark. I guess one thing that I should add, you know, I feel like every time this comes up, you know, we need to provide this disclaimer. Listeners, we're two white guys from relatively well-off families financially upon growing up. We both went to college. Mark, I don't want to speak about your financial situation and whether or not you had a lot of student debt coming out of your programs or anything. But I mean, in any case, you know, Mark can certainly speak as a you know, as a member of a religious community that historically and in recent times has been largely repressed and had violence and anger towards it. But I mean, outside of that, you know, the fact is I'm a straight cisgender white guy from the suburbs, and I'm probably in the upper 95th percentile in terms of privilege in this country. And the only other 5% is the fact that my parents were probably on the top half of the middle class as opposed to being in the, you know, the upper, you know, 10-1%, so to speak, you know, like, so, I guess with that said, MLS has come out with a few statements. Recently, they tweeted Major League Soccer has made the decision to postpone the remaining 5 matches. They list them. I won't list them. Scheduled for this evening. Those matches will be rescheduled. So at time of recording, those games are not necessarily canceled. And at least there's not initially a full-on suspension of the season or canceling of the season. I should be pointed out, Mark. Mark Anthony Kay, midfielder for LAFC, quote tweeted that tweet from at MLS and said, "We the players made the decision. Fix this, please." MLS implying that they made the decision rather than the players doing it, and MLS deciding to not push back in any way, shape, or form. And I'd recommend Mark Anthony Kay is a really great follow in general for MLS, and he's been spitting fire the last couple of days. So certainly check out all of his stuff on his page. And then a further pinned tweet that MLS has on their statement as well. The entire Major League Soccer family is deeply saddened and horrified by the senseless shooting of Jacob Blake and events in, is it Kenosha? I'm still not sure on the pronunciation of that Wisconsin town.
My best friend is from there. My colleague in rabbinical school, Dan Selzberg, is the grew up in Kenosha, and so Kenosha, Wisconsin. Yeah, it's kind of wild. I mean, you know, to be blunt and to be kind of flip about it, at least he's figured out one of his sermons for the high holidays. So, which is one of the things that us rabbis are all working on right now. I got to do 6 sermons, Matt, and I've only gotten through 3. So now we know what you're talking about, but. Kenosha, Wisconsin. Go ahead.
End events in Kenosha, Wisconsin. We continue to stand with the black community throughout our country, including our players and employees, and share in their plan, anger, and frustration. The entire Major League Soccer family unequivocally condemns racism and has always stood for equality, but we need to do more to take tangible steps to impact change. We will continue to work with our players, our clubs, and the broader soccer community to harness our collective power to fight for equality and social justice. I guess now the thing for me, Mark, is, you know, obviously we had everything that went around the opening game of the MLS's back tournament. You know, it was initially just organizing, getting people involved, scheduling meetings, whatever was going on with the BPC. Kai Kamara heavily involved with that. Jonathan Lewis, I spoke to Lalas Abubakar about that, and he said initially, you know, he wasn't one of the leaders, but he's involved and he's in all of their, I don't want to speak for them to, you know, are they having like WhatsApp or Skype calls? But in any case, those guys are in communications. Certainly Justin Morrow from Toronto FC as well, who's been kind of the leader and the champion of that alongside Kai, Bill Hamid, Jeremy Bobasi, et cetera, et cetera. And so initially the response from MLS was, we have nothing wrong with you doing any of that stuff. The Players Association immediately chose to recognize the existence and give the BPC, you know, a seat at the table or involvement. The BPC had kind of said, you know, we want to come out, we want to have initiatives, we want a seat at the table, but then TBD on what that means, whether that is, you know, targeted involvement in activities or what clubs are doing from a community engagement, nonprofit or charity standpoint. You know, it wasn't really clear, at least to me, and maybe I wasn't paying attention to it, so that might be on me, Mark, of what tangible actions they were taking, or if this was something that was going to be, you know, obviously an ongoing process, and that, you know, it just hadn't really, none of the immediate actions had been materialized, because obviously they were focusing on doing stuff in the bubble. And now I think this is a clear another inflection point of Don Garber and company can't come out and just say, you know, they can't come out and say, we're here to be good listeners and the BPC has a seat at the table and we'll have meetings for them and our job is to listen. I think this is now an inflection point where the players association, potentially the staff and the coaches as well, and through the BPC, the Black Players for Change, it was poorly the, I can't remember what the original name was, and immediately I learned that it was BPC, Mark, so maybe I think it was the MLS Black Players Coalition. In any case, now it's the Black Players for Change, BPC for short. Like, now this is MLS is now going to have to take tangible action, and we're going away from, Mark, the canned corporate statements of we need to listen, racism is back, hashtag Black Lives Matter, to now this is going to have to be more of a Ben and Jerry's, we're donating a bunch of money to nonprofits that seek racial justice and racial equality. We're coming out with a new flavor. That flavor is called Black Lives Matter, like scorched earth, like coming after you neo-Nazis sort of a thing. And so now I think this is where that's going to have to be. I don't know how that action looks like. I obviously am not the person, as I said a couple minutes ago, to provide that perspective. I'm here to listen. I'm here from a reporter and a podcaster standpoint to tell those stories. But mostly what I'm just doing is listening and then amplifying and then providing a few, you know, key perspectives on that. But it's unclear for me right now, Mark, what that tangible action looks like. But this is clearly an inflection point. Now silence is violence. And now I would say anything but total action, you know, getting in line with them and being in lockstep, or, you know, let's use a rapid, you know, let's use a river analogy, you know, rowing along with them in unison. Anything less than that now is going to be met with resistance, with protest, with a borderline strike from MLS. And now every single action that somebody else takes is going to be a political statement. If a white player comes out and says, no, I'm not, I'm there, I'm available for selection for this weekend. If any individual team says, no, we are playing. If any owner, or if the owners, the whole of the league comes out and said, well, you were striking, we already asked you to take a pay cut, you getting paid as it was based on the CBA that we renegotiated before the MLS is back tournament was contingent on the regular season happening. You're not doing the regular season. We're executing a force majeure or threatening to not pay you. That will now come, I think, it already would have come with a significant backlash from the fans, but that now is a political statement of not only are we not paying you because you're choosing to not provide the labor that you are contracted to provide, but we are doing that in extent, effectively saying that we are against the political statements that you're trying to make in choosing not to play. And so I think that bears the question mark. Are the Rapids going to play at DSG against Sporting Kansas City on Saturday? Is Sporting Kansas City even going to get on their charter flight to come to this game? Is the season in doubt? And I mean, what does that even look like? And so now I think, you know, I'm waiting to hear from Don Garber, and I'd be really interesting to hear from the owners in terms of how they'll be handling this from a financial standpoint and anything that was going on with the various charities that they're affiliated with or that are directly related to the clubs that they own and operate. Anything else that do we want to do predictions, Mark? Do we want to preview Sporting Kansas City?
I think so.
Do you think, right now, do you think the game against SKC on Saturday gets played at any point this weekend?
I think so, because you make your point, I'm a man who, to some degree, makes a living trying to find that important balance between making a valid and important point and boring the audience or kind of overselling the point to an eye-rolly reaction, right? And I think you boycott the midweek games, you get a very strong statement. You boycott the weekend games and you might lose people. You might have people say, oh, you know, these spoiled athletes with their privilege and yada, yada, yada. The only argument that a group of athletes could potentially make regarding why you would want to boycott on Saturday is if all the athletes in all the major sports got together and said, we're not playing a single damn game in this country until the Senate reconvenes. By the way, the U.S. Senate is at recess because there's nothing going on in America that needs, you know, political action right now, he said incredibly sarcastically. Unless you can really galvanize all of American athletes and say, we're not playing another damn game until you guys sit down and start to move in some sort of serious direction towards a resolution of the problems our country is facing right now, then it just kind of, it doesn't have any, you know, real meaning. You know, boycotting another game doesn't have a lot of meaning. So I think there's going to be an SKC game. I'm more than okay with them having an SKC game. You can play your games and work behind the scenes with other athletes to make sure that, you know, racial justice stays on the front burner of the American mindset. So with that said, you know, I think the SKC game could be an interesting one. To pivot to actual soccer talk, Matt, I tuned in to watch the SKC Houston game, and boy, did SKC get opened up and shellacked. I mean, it was they looked really kind of disheveled at points, which could go in two directions. One, it could tell us that SKC is not that good a team this year, or in another direction, you could very much and if you're looking at all of their results together, it might kind of spell this. It might more state that this weekend might be hard for the Rapids because SKC will come in full of piss and vinegar, angry about the way that they were abused and mistreated on Tuesday night against Houston. And they will – at home, by the way. They were humiliated at home in front of an audience who made a lot of groans for each of those five goals that went in. That they will come in and want to play the Colorado Rapids and play them hard because, you know, that's really important to them. Matt, your thoughts on SKC?
I don't think the game gets played on Saturday. I don't think we're going to see any. I think it was one game scheduled for Friday. I think it was a Canadian Classique. I do not think that game takes place. I do not think any of the Saturday games the games that were scheduled for Saturday take place on Saturday. That being said, Mark, I agree with your sentiment that, you know, Peter Vermees hasn't been happy about how this season has gone for them. I think they had a really disappointing departure from the MLS's back tournament. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. I believe they were eliminated by Philadelphia. Yes, Mark is nodding there for listeners since this is an audio podcast. And so obviously, you know, I thought they had a really good result at Minnesota, in which I think they reestablished their game and obviously got taken apart on the counter by the Houston Dynamo. And I think that is the way that I would expect the Rapids to try and handle this, given how we've seen these two teams play against each other, where the Rapids are going to be comfortable not having the ball. They're going to try and hit them on the counter. And so, you know, that's a system. We just haven't seen a whole lot of execution from the Rapids. As we'll be getting into it, Mark, we will be reviewing the Rocky Mountain carnage from this past Saturday, folks. So I think the Rapids are going to have to be really sharp on that front. They are getting healthy. I can report that Nicholas Benezet did have a knock that made him unavailable for Saturday's game against RSL. He was on the bench for the Rapids for the roster tonight, so presumably he was eligible for selection. And Robin Fraser, in media availability, Mark, said that that he was coming along and he was going to be available sometime this week, if not next week. So the fact that he was on the bench for tonight tells me that he's probably available for the game as well on Saturday, maybe even in a greater capacity with more time to heal and who knows what training looks like. But so I think it's, you know, it's really similar to the RSL game in that this is a team that Colorado still has had a lot of trouble with. It is a team that is more talented than them. It's a team that I think will be up to speed from a fitness standpoint, given how much time they had to reestablish themselves and how big, you know, hashtag Sporting Fit is a big deal to Sporting Kansas City. And obviously, they didn't have a game scheduled for midweek, so the entire week they were focusing on Colorado anyways. So in that, I think it's going to be a tough match. It's going to be about can they contain Alan Pulido in ways that the Houston Dynamo were able to, and are they going to be able to finish their chances? You know, the Rapids had a couple of really good half chances in the second half against RSL. Eunice Nomley hit the post. That could have been a goal. I think that would have made it 2-2 at the time, and ultimately RSL was able to get out on the front foot early in the second half. Colorado had to come out of their shell, and that made them susceptible at the back. I don't think the Rapids, with the talent that SKC has up front, can afford to have a lot of counterattacks that are even in terms of numbers and expect them to be able to get results. So they need to stay tidy and organized in their structure at the back. They need to take advantage of their opportunities, and they can't let the game get away from them to where they have to chase the game, because I don't think the team set up is going to be able to chase the game as well as they did in Orlando, pretty much from exclusively some bench heroics from Jonathan Lewis. And obviously, Mark, you know, he did not look, you know, this is an ongoing conversation that we might have had tonight, pending what Lewis was going to do. Was he starting tonight? I can't even remember. 2 hours ago feels like
it was a wild lineup. If we want to actually sort of kind of talk soccer, it was going to be a wild lineup. Cole Bassett was on the left. Austin Trusty was at center back. It could have been
Andre Shinyashiki as the 10. Rubio was again starting with Kai on the bench.
If we want to get into tactics, I don't think Shinyashiki was really going to be a 10. I think he was really going to float. I think he was going to interchange with Cole Bassett. I think he was going to look more in attack. In defense, I think it was probably going to look 4-2-3-1 like it was written down on paper. In attack, I would imagine it was going to look more 4-4-2. And I would assume that Shinyashiki would kind of play that striker role, or he would have played as a kind of a reserved kind of second striker in a 4-4-1-1. But that's, you know, imagining what this game might have been like if they had actually played it is maybe the silliest thing I have ever done. Of course, I've had several rum drinks in order to deal with the issues of today, so.
And who knows, because post-game, Mark, Robin said, you know, we were aware of the fixture congestion. Based on how this season was scheduled to happen, we were going to have to rotate the squad anyways. So the understanding was they were going to try and put out a lineup against RSL was going to be effective, with the understanding that they weren't going to try and beat RSL at the cost of, you know, having to manage the load of other players as to where they were going to lose to Dallas and then lose to Sporting Kansas City. So obviously now they're not playing the game against FC Dallas. That was not in the plans, I assume, when Robin Fraser woke up and left his home to get on the bus to go to the plane, to go to the airport to catch a charter flight to Frisco to play a game. But obviously, maybe this changes things, where now it was okay, we had a whole week to actually recover, albeit with a day wasted flying there and back. The Rapids are flying back tonight, I believe, as we speak here, folks, on a charter flight back. So they will be back home in Denver tonight. So they have a whole week's rest, albeit with a day lost of training and maybe some dehydration from the two flights and being in and around the Dallas area. But so presumably they'll have everybody healthy, and maybe that changes the game plan to where we see something that was more similar to last Saturday, maybe something a little bit closer to what would have been the plan Wednesday, or maybe it's something that's completely different or a hybrid of the two. So I don't think it's worth much, Mark, speculating about what tonight's game would have looked like given it didn't actually happen. And I think it's a largely an unknown in terms of what that structure looks like for Saturday. That just gives Robin Fraser more flexibility, again, pending on whatever conversations they're having on the plane tonight, or potentially in any team meetings or training tomorrow, as to whether or not they're going to continue to protest and just choose to not play the game against Sporting Kansas City, regardless of what SKC might be doing. Anything else that, I guess, Mark, do we haven't actually answered that. Do we think the season's actually going to still happen?
I think you threw that out there as a red herring. Yeah, the season's going to still happen. We thought months ago that in our naivete that the season was at risk because of COVID. We didn't realize that kind of nonstop kind of American chaos was going to be the cause of all of the problems in the league, but I don't know. I mean, I think we'll find out. I've seen things on Twitter of people talking about, you know, a so-called general strike, but I think that, you know, for me to speculate as to the degree to which America is up in arms about this issue and how it affects America sports is well beyond my professional abilities or my amateur abilities as a soccer podcaster.
I think it's worth pointing out. Oh, Mark, guess where Tommy Smith signed with this week?
Colchester United, is that right?
Yes, he did, in League Two.
That's total non sequitur for you. Just Tommy Smith needs to come up in the news just because why the heck not, you know?
I mean, we don't have anything else. Like, that's the closest thing we're going to have to actual soccer to talk about tonight. I guess League Two, they don't start till next month. But in any case, I think it's worth pointing out, Mark, if we're into, you know, we were hit it before the record button, listeners, Mark was going on one of his usual rants about the state of soccer coverage in America and in Denver. Denver 7 News at Denver Channel on Twitter tweeted out, breaking the Colorado Rapids, comma, the state's professional soccer club based in Commerce City, comma, announced earlier this evening it has postponed its match against FC Dallas. Other teams across the league followed.
That's great. They made it sound like the Rapids led the league in this decision, wherein the reality was, and although Kai Kamara's tweet makes it sound like players gathered and they talked and then they, you know, decided to do that. But, you know, Matt, you buried the lead. I love that you think that Tommy Smith is a big issue that we should all talk about. But this guy who plays in La Liga for Barcelona, who just signed his way out of a contract, is not worth discussing. So.
Mark, we already talked about Messi last week, and I think it is worth pointing out just again in the weirdness of how most of the mainstream Denver-based media covers the Rapids that they had to describe them as the state's professional soccer club based in Commerce City, which I think is a telling statement either about their understanding or the way they cover the Rapids or what they think their audience knows about the Rapids. Also, if we're talking about professional, so implying that Switchbacks are minor league or that they're professional but lower division, massive shade thrown at the Switchbacks here since they are clearly not the state's professional soccer club.
Right. I'll say, and, you know, pardon me for those of our older listeners and pardon me for those of our listeners who were devotees to local news. I got to be honest, I don't think local news is representative of almost anybody who actually watches Major League Soccer or who is young and quote unquote with it, right? Like, local news is for people who have time to sit and digest their news as it is spit at them by local broadcasters of a specific ilk for a specific 1 hour segment in the day. For the rest of America, basically 90% of us, we all know about this thing called the internet, where you can get the news when you want it. You can read it and digest it. You can
watch it in 1 minute as opposed to an hour with commercials.
Exactly. The number of people who are watching the local news, and who are also really with it and well informed, it's not a very large Venn diagram, Matt. So, that being said, that's my incredible shade being tossed at local news. That being said, one of my favorite people here in Pittsburgh who shows up to Riverhounds games every once in a while is one of the local sportscasters, which I never, by the way, almost never used to see. There was one local sportscaster in Colorado who moved to New England, and I forget her name. But she was really great, and she would come out to the Rapids sometimes. But other than that, I never met a local sportscaster at one of the Rapids games. So, you know, no disrespect, but local news is not usually very much with it in either Colorado or in Pittsburgh regarding anything outside of the professional pro football throwball team. And that's because, you know, it drives ratings.
I have some serious doubts, Mark, about whether or not the season will happen going into this weekend and what the season looks like. And the fact is there was so much fixture congestion just to try and get the season done on time. And I think the walkout of games by the players will extend beyond tonight. And I think it will happen in a way such that it is at least somewhat disruptive to at least one team as far as their schedule in terms of trying to make the regular season as scheduled with the 18 games, 9 home, 9 away, starting a couple weeks ago, actually happen without it just being chaotic or having to alter the schedule elsewise. But listeners, this past Saturday, August 22nd, the Colorado Rapids played their first proper Rocky Mountain Cup game of the 2020 season, and they lost to Real Salt Lake in another calamitous and almost like Greek tragedy level predictability. The Rapids come out and they have really good energy in the first half. Rightfully so, are up 1-0 at halftime. An Aaron Herrera own goal created by some really great work from Diego Rubio, dancing around Justin Glad, trying to make a cross goal. I believe Yunus Nnamdi and Kellen Acosta were in the area, but in any case, it goes off Herrera and past Andrew Putna. And the Rapids were up 1-0. And then basically RSL decided that they were going to continue working. And the Rapids ended up getting down, on a golazo by Demir Krylach. He is the bane of the Rapids' existence right now, set up by Justin Miram with a golazo in the 57th minute. Not a whole lot the Rapids really could have done other than somebody closing him down. But let's be real, Mark. If Jack Price scores that, we're talking about why Jack Price didn't rightfully win goal of the week in MLS, not, oh man, the RSL defense was so bad for allowing that goal to happen. Mikel Chang of Cuba, who was with the RSL 2 team, Real Monarchs last year in the USL, scores off the bench in the 76th minute off of a great play by Albert Rusnak, drifting in behind Lala Sububakar, who could have been more attentive, and then kind of a calamity of errors of nobody closing him down, and Chang perfectly threading the ball between several Rapids players. A little bit of an argument that Yarborough could have done a better job corralling the ball, Mark, but there's plenty of medium to small slices of blame pie that should be going out to the Rapids defenders on that one, and I do not think the goalkeeper deserves the largest slice of blame pie. Corey Baird with a great goal in the 85th minute. The Rapids having to commit numbers forward to try and get back into the game. They were susceptible at the back, and Corey Baird scores effectively in garbage time on the counter. And then Justin Miram with a great volley on a very similar situation, just in terms of the Rapids being far forward and being put in a position where RSL could counter quickly, and if they could get the ball into a good area, they would have at worst even numbers and a good chance for them to finish. Yarborough could have done a better job in terms of not letting the ball go through his legs, but I mean, that was the cherry on the top, Mark, of what I think Andre Shinyashiki did a very good job of summing up. The Rocky Mountain Cup in recent years hasn't really been, or I think it's been a slight talent advantage to RSL. They've been a better team overall in MLS, making the playoffs consistently. They have better talent, and that talent comes through better in terms of the money spent in Krylach and Rusnak, especially. But RSL doesn't do anything special against the Rapids. They don't do anything tactically that is unique or super challenging for the Rapids that is much different from what they do against every other team. As Andre put it post-game, they simply want it more. And the fact is, the Rapids played for at most 55 minutes in this game, maybe an hour. You could stretch that out to say, okay, 1-1, they had a little bit of reaction. They definitely didn't show up in the final 15 minutes with Chang scoring in the 76th minute to make it 2-1. And the fact is, RSL fought for 90 minutes, and RSL fought for 90 minutes and were there from the beginning in the way the Rapids weren't in Orlando, and that very much mimics the similar theme that we've seen in Rocky Mountain Cups have passed red cards, double red cards notwithstanding. Mark, what was your good thing, if any, from this past Saturday's loss to Rocky Mountain Cup that effectively, barring a massive miracle and probably the biggest Rapids win in the history of this rivalry, it will be 12 Rocky Mountain Cups to RSL in, or no, it will be 10 Rocky Mountain Cups to RSL in the last 12 years?
I guess our good thing was the first half. The first half was tight, and in the sense that and positioning was pretty good. I could see that what the Rapids were attempting to do, which was move the ball forward thoughtfully and create nice attacking triangles and move down the wing and still keep players in the center of the pitch who would defend in the event that RSL got the ball on the counter. So I think one thing that a lot of soccer fans either forget or intuitively know, but kind of like get enraged at when we lose games is that, you know, when the team loses because they don't score goals, they don't score enough goals, there's a sense of like, why don't we commit more numbers forward? Why aren't people attacking from the middle of the field? And the answer is because you don't want to open yourself up and then get hammered on the counter, or you don't want to, you know, commit in the wrong places on the field and turn over the ball and just be absolutely exploitable on the counterattack. So I think the Rapids did a good job of that in the first half. Matt, what was your good thing?
I mean, I thought Rubio had a real, I thought he looked really good. You know, I had some concerns when I saw that, you know, Kai was going to be on the bench in terms of what that meant. Not that that was any doubt on Rubio, but it's like, okay, Rubio's starting. Rubio had some good moments, but wasn't able to finish on, a couple of his really good chances in Orlando. Have him show me something. And okay, on the score sheet 5 years from now, if I look back at this game, I'm not going to remember that Rubio created that own goal, that it was a run all by himself. He tried to create a little bit of time and a little bit of space by holding up the ball. He did a great dribble around. He dribbled really well around the sliding Justin Glad and ultimately created the goal. Even when he struck the ball, the intention was not to shoot. So I thought he added some really good moments. I've been one of the biggest critics of Danny Wilson in his time with the Rapids, and I thought Saturday's performance was one of the best that he has had with the club. It should be noted, Danny Wilson subbed off in the 83rd minute. It was 2-1 at that point, so understandably, the Rapids were trying to get back into the game. Kai comes up, and they go 2 up top. I think Andre Shinashiki had already subbed into that game, and they were clearly going 3 at the back with the 2 fullbacks, Vines and Rosenberry, and then Lawless in the middle, and with more numbers in the midfield, and I think 2 center forwards, with Kai obviously being the, let's just lump balls up and assume that Kai's going to be able to beat Justin Glad and Andrew Putnam in the air on a header, for example. So, you know, Danny Wilson doesn't deserve fault on either of the second two goals. The first goal, or the second goal that was created, the one that Chang scored, came from the other side of the field out wide initially from them. I thought Danny Wilson maybe could have been in a better job to be a little bit further up, but you know, that's more in the midfield. At that point, Mark, the entire back line had collapsed into the box to try and deal with the shot on goal and with the run from Albert Rusnak. And then at that point, the midfielders had also collapsed to where I think it was the entire back four, Yarborough, obviously, and then Jack Price, and I believe Kalen Acosta was also level with, if not behind the ball, between the ball and the goal at the time that Chang strikes the ball where he struck it, if that made any sense. So, I mean, if anybody's supposed to come out to actually close that down, it should be the midfielders. And I think this speaks to, I've noticed this, I've brought it up at times, Mark, but I think the Rapids still structurally, and this goes back to the Anthony Hudson era, in terms of midfield roles, other than Jack Price being the semi-libero, semi-regista, haven't been really well defined. And at times that's really good for the creativity in terms of getting forward. We've seen that, you know, help Kalen Acosta come alive in big moments when he's played really well or created a goal. But ultimately when they collapse, it's just everybody collapse and there's been nobody really deal with those late runners. It's everybody's collapsed too far. And by the time that second wave comes in of a runner, you know, a late running guy into the box, we've seen this against RSL. We saw this against Sporting Kansas City. This is something they have trouble with. And I wonder if that is just the innate disposition of the players, if that's something that they're being coached or something that just hasn't been addressed in terms of making sure that those midfielders are looking over their shoulder to see if there's somebody dangerous trailing behind in the play. And if the guys if the guys behind them have things roughly in track of, can they stay with that runner so that he just doesn't have an open look on a trailing rebounded ball or a ball that's back passed in order to shoot with nobody else on him, and they can just line up their angle perfectly like how Chang did. So I guess this is me getting a little off track. I agree with you. The first half was good. I thought Rubio put in a good performance. I thought Danny Wilson had one of his best performances for the Rapids. And I'm at the point, Mark, to where if in an individual game, Robin Fraser is choosing Danny Wilson over an Austin Trusty or a Drew Moore, my immediate reaction isn't, oh God, that's a mistake, or I'm not immediately going to ask Robin in any post-game or media availability, you know, hey Robin, why did you choose Danny Wilson? I think he had a really bad moment in Orlando that got him the red card that ultimately was preceded by a really good performance. I thought he had a really solid performance against RSL, and I thought the team dropped off completely defensively in his absence. So for me right now, I think Danny Wilson is just on par with Drew Moore and Lalas Abubakar in terms of being a starting center back. Obviously Moore and Wilson have been more the left center back, and we've seen Lalas at the right center back. Should be noted, folks, Austin Trusty was supposed to make his first start for the Rapids tonight against FC Dallas. I've already said what my big ones were, but Mark, your thoughts on what were your bad things?
So many bad things. So I disagree with you on one point. It's pretty rare we disagree in any way, shape, or form in this podcast, which is because we have a full-on Vulcan mind meld, Matt. But I think the goal that Demir Krylak scored in the 57th minute should not have been scored. He was totally wide open from like 25 yards out, and it's because the central midfield of the Rapids decided to mark all the guys running into the box and collapse into the box, which meant that they had kind of collapsed the zone and they had multiple guys, you know, in the box, but they were missing a couple guys outside, and the main one was Krylak. And, you know, that is probably, if you look at the tape, that is probably Kellen Acosta's man. That is probably his responsibility. He had slid over to the other side of the field. I don't know where Jack Price had slid in that moment. I'd have to go back and look at it. But it's pretty clear that Pricey is covering somebody on the left side of the field, probably collapsing to deal with Justin Merrim, who has made the really nice dribble and then a nifty little spin move to put himself into a dangerous spot. Acosta has floated over and out of his off of his what's called the weak side of the field. You know, he's come strong side, and if you're rotating strong side, you kind of have to know that there's no one on the weak side who's going to receive the ball, because otherwise you've basically left your man. And Acosta left his man and left his zone. That can be, to your point, Matt, excused by the fact that he was a late runner. He's way out there. You know, he scores a real banger. And you might be right that, like, even if you've got a defender standing in there, like, that may still have gone in. Other bad things. I mean, I think the post 84th minute collapse is pretty embarrassing. They went from 2-1 to 4-1 in a blink of an eye. I kind of missed this on Good Thing, but Yunus Namli had a beautiful shot with his left foot dribbling from the right side. He did something which in soccer moves or dribbles is called a foundation. If you have ever coached soccer, you know this. It's basically that thing where you're dribbling the ball between from your left foot to your right foot. I mean, I as a youth soccer coach. You start teaching foundations to, like, U5s. I mean, little kids are working on that. And he basically uses a foundation to dribble his way all the way into an extremely dangerous spot. And then he curls a beautiful left footer, and it bangs off the post. So that was my other good thing. But other than that, you know, I'll disagree with you one more time slightly, but not really, to say that, like, yeah, I really do think that Yarbrough should have scooped that second ball up. If you look at all of the plays that RSL had to contend with, all of the goaltending that they did in this game versus, you know, what Yarbrough, his one opportunity there where he could have really made a difference in the game, it's a big difference. And I think that hurts. So yeah, that's a couple of bad things. You know, overall, the Rapids just didn't hold the ball very well. There were, you know, you fixate when you watch the quick 4 minute replay of a game, you fixate on the passes, passes in the final third and the goals. You kind of forget the overall flow of the game. And another bad thing, you know, you said, hey, what's your bad thing, Mark? And I was like, well, I have a list. There were just a lot of plays where RSL pinged a nice ball across the field, settled it with a touch or two, made a couple of nifty passes, and put themselves in a dangerous place. And there are a lot of plays for the Rapids where they looked a little shaky coming out of the back. They sprayed it down the wing right into a guy who was already marked. That guy kind of didn't really control the ball, and then he fired a pass across the field, which wasn't very good. There were a lot of those. There were a lot of plays where, like, the Rapids didn't look super great. They weren't, there were a couple plays where they looked fine. They had three or four really good passes. They moved the ball up the field and then one unsecured, ball. And, you know, it was turned over and it was like, guys, you gotta be flawless for 10 to 20 passes in order to put yourself into a dangerous position. And if you can't do that, you're irrelevant. And there was a lot of that. There's a lot of, you know, to be real blunt, 2017 Rapids behavior, 2015 Rapids behavior in this game. It was a little uncharacteristic if you watched the Rapids win their first two games of this season. And, but that being said, to finish the thing off, like, this is kind of where we're at with RSL, you know? This is why my prediction last week was basically super pessimistic. We can't seem to get it together against RSL. We poop the bed every time we play RSL. To that point, we have played RSL 15 times since July 11th of 2015. We have won only three of those games. We have tied one of them, and we have lost 11, Matt. We've lost 11 games. We've lost the last five regular season meetings with RSL. We haven't, you know, we haven't beaten them since 2017. And that's like ridiculous. We're snake bit. Like, we just don't know what we're doing. I don't know what it is. If it could, it could totally just be bad luck. It could be bad timing. It could be a lot of things, or it could be that the players who we keep signing don't really understand what a derby is. And they don't understand that even in a bad season, this matters a lot to the fans. You know, this matters a lot to the supporters group. I've been in C38 multiple times for a Rocky Mountain Cup, and the hate is, to quote Star Wars, flowing. We do not like them. Like, we make fun of RSL in super, super strong ways when we're standing in C38. We want to build a bonfire and put Salt Lake on the top. Like, that's how it goes down, baby. And we haven't built a bonfire with RSL anywhere but on top of us and kicking us with spiked shoes the whole time. So that's my bad thing, and I think it was about 12 bad things.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that I really have to add, Mark, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, I just based on what Shinichiki said, based on what I've talked about with players, like, there's not, you know, I don't know that there's something real or tangible behind what RSL has against the Rapids, but the fact is, whether or not there is anything real, or this is just they want it more, or they're more engaged more than 90 minutes, or engaged for the 90 minutes where the Rapids switch off either at times or once they actually get down in an individual game or in the tie for the Rocky Mountain Cup, the fact is, whether or not it's real, the fact is, it feels real to the fans, and it feels like this mental hurdle, this mental block for the players as well, clearly. And so whether it's something that actually is happening on the field or it's just placebo, the fact is, the whole going into this game, talking about revenge, talking about fight, everything that we heard from the media availability, from the podcast the Rapids put out, you're going to see fight, you're going to see attention to detail, we're going to fight for 90 minutes. This is a revenge game against RSL. And the fact is, as soon as they went down 2-1, they ultimately collapse. So whether or not there's something that's actually there, the fact is, the mental hurdle is clearly there. Now, where I've seen a lot of nihilism about the Rapids and, oh, go, woe is me, they're not going to actually make the playoffs or anything, I still contend that, you know, the three games in Orlando were very weird circumstances, both in the macro scale and in the micro of those games that happened. And ultimately, this is something that is a, you know, that is a crux for the Rapids specifically, that I don't know that that speaks to the team as a whole. Now, that said, there's not a whole lot of rest for the weary, given that they came out of that game with the understanding they had 3 days to prepare for Dallas, and then we're going to play Sporting Kansas City as well. But I hesitate to say whether or not this is the same, right now, whether or not this is the same old Rapids in terms of Robin wasn't an upgrade over Anthony Hudson, whether this team is not more talented, has more depth, and has a better mentality and a better makeup to be successful, given that two of the four games they've played since the great start have been against RSL. One of them had a bunch of crazy things happen with the officials and red cards, and the other one was a good performance against the team, and they got a result. So I'm still hesitant to say, yeah, the Rapids aren't making the playoffs at this point, or this is the same old Rapids, and, you know, we need to make massive changes to the team, and, you know, we need to, and, you know, that Porik and Robin should be on the hot seat. I'm still contending that they, the measure for success is, do they make the playoffs in this expanded playoff format? And the fact is, at least as of right now, with the season not being canceled or altered, they've got still 17 games to make that happen, and they're still in a position where, at worst, they're a bubble team in terms of actually making the playoffs. So I guess that's my big thing here, Mark. I guess the other big thing that I would add is, I think we're getting to the point to where I can comfortably say Robin Fraser and the coaching staff, based on the structure, how they want to play, and how the player has played, Yunus Nnamdi is a right-sided player, you know, a right winger in the 4-3-3. When they play more of a 4-2-3-1, I guess that would be the wide midfielder on the right in the three of that midfield. He is not a central attacking midfielder. He is not the traditional number 10. And we could do a whole episode on this, Mark. We probably have done a whole episode if you count all the clips that we've talked about this. The number 10 position, or what that number 10 does when we think about it in the traditional sense of the Diego Maradonas, Messi to a certain extent, has really been subcontracted out to other positions on the field, or just has been split up amongst other players to where they still get that level of productivity, even if it looks slightly different and it's happening from a different position and a different location on the field. And I'm totally okay with that. I thought Nnamdi had a really good performance on Saturday. You know, he created a couple of chances. If, you know, that shot that he had, instead of going off the post, you know, is a foot lower and goes in right under the bar, then we could be having a very different conversation, because that would have made it 2-2 at the time. But I think it's pretty clear at this point, Nnamdi, you know, the Rapids are seeing Nnamdi either as an option on the right in the, with the departure of Sam Nicholson. And they're seeing that as viable, potentially more viable than having him be the number 10 in the three-man midfield of Nnamdi at the 10, Kellen Acosta and Jack Price kind of being the double pivot, oscillating between one being a six and one being a number eight. So that might be the one big tactical thing that I really noticed about the game, in a positive way. Mark, anything else about this, or shall we get to Ask HTHL?
One last thought. Total non sequitur doesn't fit in with good thing, bad thing, big thing, anything. It's also not a rapid centric point, but I just wanted to note that, like, one of the pivot points in this game, which was kind of frustrating because it's unfortunate, was Douglas Martinez coming off in the 15th minute with something that looked like a head injury, and being replaced by Justin Merrim, and Justin Merrim just gutting the Rapids. I mean, he was a problem in the first half that they kind of dealt with, and in the second half, he is very involved in multiple RSL goals. The Rapids didn't seem to be able to handle him very well. And he didn't even start. You know, he wasn't even supposed to be on the field. Douglas Martinez is a great player. Wonderful young striker for RSL. And I think, you know, a lot of MLS fans had written off Justin Merrim as, you know, no longer able to do it. Back in the day, he was dominant and devastating for Columbus, and, you know, I think his star has fallen a little bit, but, you know, if you're RSL, like, maybe Justin Merrim, after a performance like that, deserves a lot more regular time. So, and more importantly, like, I kind of wonder, you know, in an alternate universe where Douglas Martinez doesn't get hurt, do the Rapids maybe play a little better in this game? Like, he was this kind of, like, first half spark plug for RSL. And he wasn't even supposed to be there. So, I don't know. Just a thought.
One other non sequitur that I completely forgot about, Mark. There were a bunch of people who signed up for AT&T TV because it was finally an option that wasn't DirecTV or Dish. I can't remember. In an effort to, you know, I guess, unblock their altitude. And a bunch of people were in my mentions saying that they were having issues. It wasn't even available. Customer care, customer support wasn't super helpful, and they weren't even able to watch the game. So I guess one of the big ironies, Mark, is there's probably a bunch of people listening to this who paid $60 or $80 for AT&T TV in the last week, 10 days. There's a bunch of people who paid for a VPN in order to be able to watch these games on ESPN Plus, and the game didn't happen tonight, and I still have doubts as to whether or not the season's going to happen as normal. And this could have been on top of fans maybe thinking, well, like, okay, by the time we get to the next season, there'll be an answer because Avs fans and Nuggets fans will be super upset, and then that'll force somebody's hands and this will get sorted out. I'm going to get into a long-term cable contract to help me save a little bit of money with the understanding that Altitude Sports is going to be available, and now they're just adding on another streaming cost where the only thing they're using it for is the 18 games that the Rapids were going to play this season, you know, which comes out to, that's like $4.50 a game. They didn't even get to watch it, and potentially that's a year-long, you know, subscription that they signed up for that's not refundable, and potentially now they're not even going to be able to watch the Rapids at all, either because of technical issues or because the players deciding that there's bigger issues than sports, understandably, but ultimately at the sacrifice of the regular season that was supposed to be, altogether going forward.
The year is 2031. Rapids fans are huddled in dark corners of bars across America, listening to Matt and Mark do a ham radio podcast of Colorado Rapids with a special or secret scrambler disc with which you can only have with the proper encryption code because big corporate evil MLS /KSE has made it completely impossible to watch the secret Colorado Rapids soccer team play any games unless you're in Guam or Kazakhstan. And the two of us, Matt, become multimillionaires by being the only people who figured out the technology to broadcast this game surreptitiously.
Well, I mean, if you're saying we're both multimillionaires, Mark, that means we each have $2 million each. That means we each have $4 million. That means we could each write a check to KSE, giving the Rapids what would potentially be the biggest transfer fee they'd pay for a player. And that might still be a record come 2031.
My plan, if we had that kind of money, Matt, would be to buy either Harpo's or FC Denver. And then just, even if we didn't get Pro Rel by then, just to take out the Rapids every year in the Open Cup, that'd be worth it by itself.
I'd be down with doing that and then trying to get one of those guys into either NISA or at least, USL League 2. In any case, listeners, we have an email, AskHGHL, from David Malenfant. David, I want to apologize. There has been some issues with my Gmail app on my iPhone, Mark, to where instead of displaying either the name that you have in terms of your user contact for your email address or just the email account, you know, the whatever at whatever.com, it is showing the first two letters of the first name that you have on your contact and then the last five letters. So instead of being David Malenfant, the only thing that you showed up as, David, was Domalen. In all caps. So, for example, Mark, if I were to, with my personal account, email rapids96podcast@gmail.com, it would come as Matt Pola. You would come up as Ma Goodma, which is obviously very, or Ma Goodm, because it'd just be the first five letters. So, yeah, Ah Goodm. So in any case, I want to apologize for that, for not recognizing who you are, David. And I want to thank you for continuing to send us your AskHGHLs and for listening to the mindless dribble of me and Rabbi. But in any case, he asks, hey guys, hope all is well. Disney is really testing my newer VPN last night, and it took me about 90 minutes to get it all settled. Bunch of dot, dot, dots. For what? Question mark. And so he asks two questions. Question number one. Are my worst fears realized? Are we better than before? But do we still stink? And then question number two, Nomly's effort defensively on goal 3 and 4 was ... not good enough. Is this why he doesn't play in the middle of the field? Question mark. Mark, I'll throw it to you. Go ahead and answer one or both of them.
On the first one, the jury's still out. It's hard to kind of, basically, where are we at, Matt? 6 games? There's the 3 in the bubble, there's the 1 against RSL, and the 2 before that, right?
Correct.
It's still pretty early. I mean, unfortunately, having covered this team now for, this is our 8th year, or my 8th year covering the team, to say, like, well, it's early, we should give the team a chance, is a mistake I've made so many times at this point, and I wind up with egg on my face. I would say that, like, we look like a mid-table team that likes to kind of collapse at really inopportune times. But that means to me that, like, we're still, after years of rebuilding, a bubble borderline playoff team. Whereas by this point in our evolution as a soccer franchise, we should be able to say, yeah, we're going to win more than we lose. We're definitely going to get like a 5 or better seed in the playoffs. And we're not. We're more mediocre than that. And it's frustrating. You know, the problems in the back line are real. The defensive midfield has never solidified itself. We didn't really talk about formation or kind of layout here, but the way Robin Fraser lined up the team this time was a 4-1-4-1, really, although on paper sometimes it looked 4-2-3-1. But we're still having the same conversation about whether Kellen Acosta gets the job done in midfield. There were long stretches of the game where he was completely absent, definitely on offense and also on defense. And, you know, we really didn't spend any time talking about our offensive output in this game, but the Rapids' one goal was an own goal. They didn't really challenge the net, except for that one time I mentioned with Nomley. There was a nice play also by Shinyashiki late in the game, but by then it was, you know, it was done and dusted. So a lot of the problems are recurring. So I think David Malafin has brought up a really good point. Your worst fears are not realized, but we're definitely not all together, and we're running out of time to put it together. I'll let the second question go to you, Matt, which is, what's the story with Nomley? Like, you know, is he, you know, a dribbly number 10 who's wonderful and then decides to kind of take a bunch of plays off on defense, or are we judging him too harshly?
So I think, one thing that I will add to your answer to the question, Mark, I think one thing that I certainly realize, I agree with you, it's still too early to tell. Technically, you know, we've had 6 games played of the 23, so there's 17 games left, so we're what, not quite a quarter of the way through the season, and the fact is, two of those games have happened against, I think, the last team I would want the Rapids to play, let's say, outside of LAFC or Seattle in a Western Conference one game playoff team. There's no doubt that RSL has their number, and so I wonder if that's kind of skewing the results. And I go back to what they had and all the potential and the promise from the early start. But the thing that's still clear to me, Mark, is the Rapids don't have a for sure match winner anywhere on the field, either in goal, in defense, from an attacking midfielder, or number 10, number 9 position, like we see for most of the big clubs with big money players in this league. But this is still, you know, this is a team that can't afford to come out in a game, that can't week to week come out, put in a B minus shift, and expect to get results. And the fact is, a lot of the players who had big moments, who were impact players, who were at their best last year, able to be match winners. Jack Price is in that category. I think Lalas Abubakar is in that category. TBD on either of the goalkeepers. I think we saw flashes of Tim Howard at his peak last year, certainly in the home game against FC Dallas, his final home game for the Rapids. We saw flashes of the Tim Howard that we saw in the World Cup against Belgium. I think Kai Kamara is capable of being that. TBD on, you know, what Andre Shinyashiki and Diego Rubio, they're still, you know, new to the team and young enough that I don't think they've matched on their potential. But the fact is, Jack Price hasn't been good. He wasn't good, even removing the red card under auspicious circumstances. He was not good against RSL in Orlando. He wasn't good against RSL last Saturday. He wasn't good against Sporting Kansas City going up to his sending off. The fact is, this is a team that if they want to make the playoffs, they can't have people take stretches or individual moments off. They need an A-minus effort at worst from their entire starting 11, and they need guys to be drivers, not passengers. Kellen Acosta was a passenger on Saturday. Jack Price was a passenger. Who's ever playing at forward was a passenger. The only guy who was really driving things forward, I'd say Rubio in the first half a little bit, did not see enough aggression from Jonathan Lewis as a starter, his first start of the game. If I'm being honest, I'd say the same of the season. I'd say the same thing of Nicholas Subskita, the only person who was like, I'm going to do something that potentially takes over this game, I'm going to make a play that unlocks a door, that changes the game, really is Yunus Nnamdi. And I'd say, you know, what we saw from Danny Wilson that was equivalent to that was preventing fires rather than having to put out any fires. They need good efforts from the center back. They need Jack Price to make plays on both sides of the ball. They need strikers to rise to the education, to the moment, and they need Yunus Nnamdi to do his thing as well. And if everybody on the whole puts in a good shift and they have guys who aren't passengers who are driving forward and making plays, this is a team that is just on the upper right side of the bubble. If they don't have one of those things or they're a little weak, they're just below the red line like we saw last year. And the fact is that this is a team that fades away in games, goes long stretches without showing up, or doesn't show up from the start of it. This is a team that is functionally not a playoff team. This is a team that is, their concrete bottom is that so Rapids. To the actual question, to the question of Nnamdi, I think we haven't really seen under Robin Fraser that right-sided midfielder needing to put in a whole lot of defensive effort beyond making sure that his fullback partner isn't totally on an island defensively. I think Andre Shinyashiki and Diego Rubio both do a fantastic job of tracking back defensively. If I was to rate this based on their 4-3-3 formation mark or the 4-1-4-1 that we've seen at times from Robin Fraser, I would say Shinyashiki has a high work rate on both sides. I would say Diego Rubio has a high defensive work rate and a moderate offensive work rate. I would say Yunus Nnamdi is probably a high offensive work rate and then a mid to weak defensive work rate. But I think going back to the points that we've both made, there's other players who are more at fault defensively for me. And so I think when I look at the defensive woes, there are other players that I'm pointing to worse on that front. And I think Yunus Nnamdi at times being the only real offensive creative spark for the Rapids, I think that outweighs anything that he didn't do defensively on any of the four goals. So I don't think that, you know, if you're coming out and saying, oh, we lost 4-1 and we gave up four goals in what, 35, 40-ish minutes, our right winger didn't track back enough defensively enough, there's other people who I have to fault on that front. That said, I don't think that Yunus Nnamdi can be, you know, if they're in that point to where they are super attacking, they're still a team that needs defensive structure. And so Nnamdi can't be a total bystander defensively. You know, his defensive effort can't be tracking back to the midway line just to make sure that they don't spin on a counter and then just sit there and wait for somebody to get the ball. But I have more issues with Keegan Rosenberry and what he didn't do on Saturday than maybe the help that he didn't get from Nnamdi or the effort from other people on the pitch. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our written musings at American Soccer Analysis and Last Word on Soccer. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Tweet us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Find us on email at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. If we bring monetary value to your life, head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL for a great deal on their digital sports content, or support us on Patreon, patreon.com/rapids96podcast. You can also support our sponsors, Icarus FC, who does a great job creating custom kits for soccer teams, for clubs and groups, and also Roughneck Scarves, who are an official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. They've fully built out, folks, the team and league merchandise for their neck gaiters and their masks, both the loops that go around your ears and the ones that have the fancier Velcro in the back that goes around in the backside of your neck that kind of has the Bane look, if you will. I have one that's just the plain back. It costs about $14, I think, plus shipping, and it's very good. It's probably the best mask that I have in my arsenal of masks. And you can also get stuff that is team specific or customizable. So Mark, if you want something that's red and white that's symbolizing an Arsenal mask, you can get that either as a scarf, as a neck gaiter, or as a mask as well. Listeners, I think that's it. Listeners, we'll see you when we see you. And either way, we're either going to have a game on Saturday or a bunch of press releases and public statements that lead to a game not be taking place on Saturday. And regardless of what happens over the weekend, we'll see you next week to talk about it and what it means for the Rapids and soccer in America. We'll see you then.
Sincerely, peace.